Wouldn't you like to take a vacation from your bills? Well, you can. With credit card balances at an all-time high and Golden Oak's 5.25% rate, you could be saving thousands of dollars after a simple phone call. Call today and get your cash in as little as 14 days and make no payments for 2 months. Visit GoldenOakLending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending cured my blues.
6.19 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, folks. Happy Valentine's Day to each and every one of you. Already halfway through the month of February. This month is just going by so quickly as we're headed towards Mardi Gras Day this weekend, parade after parade after parade, and then the following week, same thing next weekend, and the following weekend, and then Mardi Gras. And it's getting pretty busy around the city for sure. Looking forward to it. We have a great show lined up for you today at 12:45. We'll visit with Trip Rabelais, director of Lafreniere Park, the Dawn Busters. They're at it again. They are celebrating and kicking off the bicentennial and the carnival season in grand style by hosting a King Cake Capital of the World party tomorrow at 11 a.m. We'll talk about that and give you the particulars. Ron Fauché joins us, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll find out about the latest polls on just about everything that's out there. Mike Dettillier joins us at 11:30. We'll talk about his perspective of the hiring of new Saints coach Kellen Moore. Arnie Philko joins us at 11, former CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater New Orleans. We'll talk about Ukraine. We'll talk about Gaza. We'll talk about Volodymyr Zelensky and many others around the globe that warn both the president and others don't trust Putin's claim that he's ready to end the war. So I read another piece on Substack the other day, authored by Laura Canizera-Rodrigue, who joins us this morning, and it's entitled New Orleans Teens Are Graduated to Murder Behind a Veil of Secrecy in Juvenile Court. I suggest that you read this. It is a synopsis of some horrific cases that, even though some laws have passed to make juvenile court more transparency and less like the Star Chamber, doesn't seem to be working very well. And she joins us now, Laura Rodrigue. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, Noel, and happy Valentine's Day to you.
Same to you, Laura. I couldn't help. I read what you wrote twice. And as I went through this, I just can't help but ask, who's minding the ship? Who's minding the store? We have legislative changes every year. Everyone is called upon to implement them, but it seems like it doesn't really matter to juvenile court.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I was even shocked myself, and I think both of us have probably seen our fair share of shocking things in the criminal justice system in terms of transparency, not only, you know, the actual facts of what happens in some of these cases, but then what happens once they enter into the system. But I got to say, I was actually pretty shocked when I started digging into this. We had fought pretty hard. It took about 2 years to get some legislation passed for transparency in juvenile court. And I was there at the legislature both times in 2023, and again, it finally passed during the special crime session in 2024. because juvenile crime had gotten really bad. And most people will remember we were reading horrendous headlines of, you know, the Linda Fricke case, the ripping off the arm, the carjackings were all being committed by juveniles. And people were really wondering what is going on in juvenile court. And the public doesn't have any access. So in criminal court, if somebody's arrested and I see their name on the news, I can go into Docket Master from the sheriff's website and look. And it's very archaic. I'm not going to say their system is great, but at least I can have some idea of how many other charges he might have had. In juvenile court, we didn't know that at all. So we fought pretty hard to say, look, y'all are going to have to open up some of this because there's no way these juveniles are just starting out by committing these heinous murders. There has to be something going on there where there should be red flags in the system. And so we were able to get a bill passed, and it was Representative Debbie Villio fought very hard for that legislation. And we were able to get the bill passed basically saying if it's a crime of violence or if it's their second or subsequent offense, then the public should be able to see what's going on in these cases. Well, the bill passed, it was signed, it was set to go into effect in July, and everybody was kind of waiting for the system to get up and running. And then that's when Jacob Carter's family reached out to me. Jacob Carter is, if people remember, in January of 2024, he was this bagel shop owner, a tourist in New Orleans. He was here in town with his husband. They were just visiting the city, and he was a very beloved person in the state of Washington. He had opened up this very well-known bagel shop, very beloved by the community. They come down here. He gets held up at gunpoint and just shot in front of his husband. They try to do CPR. A neighbor runs screaming. And the family of Jacob is one of six siblings, was one of six siblings. It's a big Texas family. I mean, they are a very very big, loving family, and they have been relentless about answers. And I guess the best way to sum it is they've been quite horrified at what they have found about New Orleans. You know, what goes on in the criminal justice system. They found out it was a juvenile who has been indicted for murdering him. He was wearing an ankle monitor at the time. They find out that the ankle monitoring contract had lapsed. Nobody noticed it. So the ankle monitor wasn't even working. Nobody was monitoring anything. A series of other things. The street lights were out. Business owners told them they'd been begging the city to put the street lights back on in that area where he was murdered. And so I guess long story short, they reach out in desperate attempt to get answers. They were getting no responses from any emails from elected officials in New Orleans. A couple of them who did respond did kind of giving them the runaround. They even got blocked on social media from some elected officials. I mean, just really a terrible experience. So I told them, I said, let me see if I can find out what was going on in juvenile court with this particular perpetrator. And that's kind of where it started. So when I went to juvenile court, the records that we had fought so hard to make public were being denied. You know, we were told you can't see those. That's, you know, only new records. You can't see these records from his past, which was not the law. And it took us filing a lawsuit. I mean, we actually had to file a lawsuit against the clerk, go into civil district court, and then we were contacted by the clerk saying, you know, there was confusion and that they would be providing the records. So we went to juvenile court, but I have to say that was really what was shocking, just the disarray of records. They really didn't know what to provide. It took at least three trips, multiple emails. I would get a file, read it from top to bottom. And remember, I was a prosecutor for 13 years. So I have an idea of what I'm looking at or I'm looking for. I would read a file from top to bottom and I would tell the clerk, ma'am, I don't have any idea what he's charged with. There was no indication of a charge anywhere in the file. I had no idea when he was arrested, what he was arrested for, what happened to the case. So, and, you know, it was back and forth like that for a while. Ultimately, you know, we were able to, after going back many times, get a general idea of what was going on. And then when I realized how bad it was, what I did was I said, I want to see every case that has recently been transferred from juvenile court to adult court. Because if you think about it, the article goes through several cases. And I didn't pick those myself. What happened was those were the cases that had been transferred. Because if a case isn't transferred to adult court, then I would have no idea who to look for in juvenile court. I can't just pick a name out of a hat, you know. Mm-hmm. So I had to look for the cases that had been transferred. And then basically what I found in those cases after digging through records. What, the best of what I could find, I have to say, it's still very unclear in a lot of these records what was going on. You can tell people pled to something, but you can't tell what the sentence was. You can't even tell if anybody was being monitored during the sentencing, but it was horrific instances of multiple violent crimes and no accountability in juvenile court at all. And then ultimately, all of these people commit some of the most heinous murders in our city.
Laura, I'm sitting here and I'm just completely bewildered. What do they do all day? This is the clerk's job, to assemble the records, to make sure that the court records are sacrosanct, intact, everything is proper. It seems like this is busy work. Nobody gives a damn.
Yeah, it was. I'm not sure whether the judge is not having his staff keep proper minutes, or if the clerk is not aware of what to look for. And I would have assumed that the clerks would all have sort of had this worked out once the legislation was passed. But, I mean, I would caution anybody trying to look at juvenile records, good luck, because until this is resolved, you're just getting a stack of papers, and it takes a lot of time, and it takes somebody with a lot of experience in criminal justice to navigate what they're looking at. And there wasn't, I don't believe the clerk's office was trying to hide records. I just think it was in complete disarray that, you know, once I would ask them, I'd say, I need you to go back. I need to know what the sentence was. So find a document that shows me the sentence. And they would go back and they would find something and produce it. And so, you know, that's what took a lot of time. But
so there's no master file for these cases. They're not tracked.
We were not provided
case
a document
number,
master.
Item number. How does this work?
Yeah, I will say there was no docket master, which is the term we use to describe what gives you a timeline in adult court. And so we didn't have that. And if you know, I don't know if they had it, but we were not provided. And of course, we can't access their system. So we were just going back and forth, asking them, you know, one at a time, file by file. Okay, you missed this here, you missed this there. And the problem was, what we were finding was so bad in terms of their records that once we would see something, I knew there was more. So, you know, for instance, the French Quarter tourist that got so much publicity when she was murdered, that was another incident of, you know, an ankle monitoring situation that was gone, there was no monitoring. Christy Thibodeau is the French Quarter tourist who was murdered. You know, we were finding, you know, record history dating back for years of crimes of violence, aggravated assault with a firearm. I mean, the juvenile had four counts of holding a gun to people, you know, in 2023, all of these resulted in releases. Very, you know, 21 days in Boys Town were the sentences we were seeing. And then there wasn't really any indication whether there was a successful completement of that. You know, all of these crimes of violence we were catching glimpses of via certain item numbers would pop up. You know, we had Cruz Matute was a juvenile who is charged with shooting Noah Hansard in Lake Vista. We look in his record and we start seeing item numbers popping up, five different counts of armed robbery and carjacking the year before. And this one was really troubling because we could see in there that there were a lot of red flags for juvenile court to have known that more intervention was necessary. You know, we saw in early of 2022, they make a note somewhere in a file. He's missing school constantly. He is not complying with his probation. He misses every curfew. They continuously put the probation violations. Then we see by summer that he had failed out of school. He's going to have to repeat the ninth grade, or all the comments there. And then, of course, he progresses on just after they put in there how bad he's doing. He's not showing up to school. He's violating probation. He's running the streets. And a month later, he's indicted for shooting Noah Hansard, robbing him at gunpoint, leaves him for dead. Noah is now confined to a wheelchair. But the weird, you know, the disturbing, I guess I shouldn't say weird, it's disturbing part of the record is he's indicted for the shooting of Noah Hansard on August 21st. September, just weeks later, we have a minute entry from the judge commending him for doing a good job and staying out of trouble. You know, that's very alarming that just weeks before he had shot somebody, and in court, they're congratulating him for really doing good out there. You know, it was just sort of one thing after another of just really the court system failing juveniles where, you know, in my opinion, these juveniles are sending very significant red flags to the court, to probation, to everybody who's supposed to be monitoring and saying, look, I'm not going to school. I am not abiding by curfew. I'm running the streets. A lot of them are getting rearrested multiple times, 7 and 8 times, and nothing happens. Probation, you know, they're not getting revoked from probation. They're not being remanded, and they ultimately go on to kill somebody. And then what the article was really trying to demonstrate was, what did you think would happen if you didn't show them any real consequences for an armed robbery? Of course, they're going to progress on to murder. But now suddenly they progress to murder, and then we see the media is involved, and suddenly what I noted in the article was suddenly it appeared that victims mattered, and the juveniles had never been taught that before. So in other words, if these juveniles are putting a gun, you know, you have some people who had 5 counts of armed robbery, which means they're holding a gun to people, demanding money. They go to court, nothing, slap on the wrist. Well, what does that teach them? Victims don't matter. It doesn't matter. There are no consequences. Of course, the next time they're going to escalate. Well, why not kill them this time? Why not prevent an identification? Let's keep moving. So then they get to juvenile. They murder somebody. Now they're transferred to an adult court, and it's a mandatory life sentence, and they never saw it coming. Nobody in juvenile court ever warned them that at some point victims might matter, that there are consequences for taking a human life or for crimes of violence. And that's really what we're seeing here, and that's why the article is titled "The Juvenile Court is Graduating Them to Murder." It's making it very easy for them to progress. It's the natural progression they're taught there from what the records are showing.
So who actually has immediate supervisory authority over this court?
You know, I mean, they have a chief judge there. That is the person who answers whenever these questions are asked. And then, you know, my question also, and I line this up in the article, is to me, a way to address this is to address their funding as well. And that was a big problem, what I found. So if the chief of juvenile court, it is documented by the city council that they fail to provide records even to the city council. So city council's asking them, hey, we want to know what's happening in juvenile court, and it comes out in a hearing in 2022 and 2023. They're not providing the records. Well, the thing we notice, and this is, you know, something we've unfortunately become all too familiar with, is we see tons of money getting pumped into juvenile court, and nobody knows where it went. And that's the one thing that I always like to point out, because when you write these pieces or when you put something out, somebody will say, oh, they need more funding. They need better programs. If they had more money, then we could fix this. And by the city's own statement to the city council, the criminal chief commissioner says, we had so much money coming in, we were caught flat-footed. She described it as an influx of money coming into juvenile court. They were getting $4.8 million grants, two of them, $750,000 from the U.S. DOJ, $3.5 in taxpayer money allotted by the city council. So you're talking millions and millions, so much they didn't know what to do with it. To this day, only $400,000 of the $4.5 million given in federal dollars to juvenile court has been spent. $4.5 was given in 2022. To this day, they've still only spent $400,000 of it. So money's not the problem. The problem is nobody knows what they're doing with it, why it hasn't been spent properly.
Well, that's emblematic of a dysfunctional system, right? Because
correct,
the reality
yeah.
is, and I say this a lot on this show, you have to have the ability to receive. A lot of folks don't really understand what I'm saying. The ability to receive means that you have the pieces and parts of an organization that's going to create accountability and everything else that goes along with that, compliance with state procurement laws and things of that nature. If you don't have those systems in place, they could give you $200 billion and you're not going to be able to deal with it. And
that's,
I mean,
exactly,
if you
right.
just look at a repetitive task of keeping records in order, right? Most court systems you go to, they actually have a diagram of how the file is going to look, when you open a file, you expect to see something that's going to be the first sheet there all the time. Typically, it's the docket master, right? It's which is a summary of everything that's happening in the case. And then behind the docket master, you're going to find all of the supporting documentation to support every item, minute that's on the docket master, right? In that order.
Correct.
In chronological order. That's how I've seen it going back to 1977 when I started in this business. I mean, it's not rocket science. You just got to mind the P's and Q's. But this is just emblematic of a system that's run amok. It's totally dysfunctional. They don't know what they're doing. And it begs of somebody in authority to step in and do something. I mean,
well, that's exactly right.
And how many more innocent people have to be killed? How much more carnage and blood in the streets do we have to experience before someone in this court system wakes up, looks himself in the mirror, and recognizes that maybe they are the problem? I mean, it's just craziness.
Yeah. And look, I think back to when we were fighting in the legislature to get the bill passed. And of course, the majority of opposition came from Orleans Parish legislators who said, we don't want juvenile records made public because it could potentially impact the future of a juvenile who, you know, maybe if they're applying for a job and somebody can see their record. That was basically the big argument that they thought they needed juveniles protected. You know, when I read through these documents, it really became clear that it's not the juvenile who's being protected at all. Quite the contrary. It seems to be the court the system that's being protected. You know, one of the cases that I still do not get an explanation for, I have no idea how this possibly happened.
Let's do this. I got to get to a break. Let's continue this conversation, if you can stay. Can you stay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. We'll continue this conversation with Laura Rodrigue talking about a piece that she published, New Orleans Teens Are Graduated to Murder Behind a Veil of Secrecy in Juvenile Court. We'll be right back, folks. Stay.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
With us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Laura Rodri, co-founder of Bayou Mama Bears, former Orleans prosecutor, talking about a piece that she published. It's in Substack. New Orleans teens are graduated to murder behind a veil of secrecy in juvenile court. We were talking about the large sums of money that they had the court had received and obviously has the inability to execute on those dollars to implement the programs that they said to someone that they were going to implement. And here we sit many, many years later, and the money's still not spent. And when you look at these records that you outline in your piece, you just got to scratch your head and say, you know, what are we doing?
Right. It's, you know, I think that when you combine the fact that they've been given millions of dollars to try to address the problem that we're seeing with our young people in the city, and they didn't even bother to use it. They didn't bother to implement anything. And if it was a problem, they didn't bother to tell anybody, like, hey, we're trying to work something out here, or we're working toward a program, nothing. And they let the problem go on. And it's not just small things we're seeing here. You know, it's not like we're seeing a theft here or there. You know, we're seeing really violent crimes happening. They're committing these crimes at very young ages and multiple times, multiple counts. Many of them would commit multiple armed robberies in one day, meaning they'd rob somebody, you know, take a break for a few hours, and then put a gun to somebody else. The case that one of the cases that we cited there, you had a juvenile who picked up 138 charges in a month. And that doesn't even seem mathematically possible, but the documents are all there. He was burglarizing people all day long, just one house to the next, one car to the next, just smashing windows and cars, grabbing things. And he had a history of it. Nobody ever stopped him. I mean, he started doing this in January of 2023 and never stopped. Just year, you know, for a couple of years spree of it, you know, breaking into cars, all that sort of stuff. And there's just no intervention there, no even attempt to redirect the juveniles. The money just sits, no programs. One of the juveniles, one of the things I still don't understand how it happened. If people remember the shooting of Mr. Toops, he was robbed, carjacked, and shot by some juveniles. Ultimately, I believe the case was dismissed. I think the DA missed the deadline on that one. The case got dismissed. But that particular juvenile had picked up several armed robberies and gun charges, and he was actually sentenced to juvenile life, which was the only one I saw. Juvenile life meaning, you know, they give him the sentence as it read was he was hereby placed with the Office of the Juvenile Justice until his 21st birthday or until October 1st of 2025, which would have been his 21st birthday. Somehow, I mean, obviously, he should still be in jail. He was somehow out months after the imposition of that sentence in 2022, which is when he carjacked and shot Mr. Toops in July. die. So it doesn't, I have no explanation for. He gets a juvenile life sentence. He's still supposed to be in jail now. Months later, he's out, and he shoots Mr. Toops, who spent 71 days in the ICU. But nobody would have ever known that. Nobody would have ever known what was going on in court before, what nobody would even known to have asked those questions, and the victims were never told. And many of these victims in the story had been asking, can somebody please tell me his juvenile record? What happened? Why was he out? Why was he on an ankle monitor? What was the crime before? You know, so the secrecy of that really has, it's extremely disturbing what they were hiding going on in juvenile court. And this is just the handful of cases that I asked for. So I can't even imagine what this would look like if somebody did a comprehensive review of what's happening in juvenile court in Orleans Parish. I think it would be extremely devastating, not just to the juvenile offenders, who clearly have no chance there, but also to the victims who are lying in wait for juveniles who are basically being trained to commit murder. So, you know, this is it was a really devastating research project for me to see. It was worse than I expected.
Why is it there's someone compelling it, Judge Darrensberg in this case, that he would let someone out just 4 months later after having sentenced the individual to juvenile life?
I mean, I have no idea.
What could this young person exhibit within 4 months that he's ready to go back out on the streets? Who in their right mind would think that this is a good idea? I mean, all the releases here is amazing. I mean, you have charge after charge after charge after charge. Some, they put them on electronic monitor. The system is not even working. And others, they just release them. And they have a history of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 charges. Who in their right mind thinks that that's a good idea, that they, that the risk is worth it to the community?
Well, that's exactly right. And then when you see them documenting there that they are repeatedly violating, re-violating as they're out, and there's no action taken, you know, that's what's bizarre. And I think the reason that we see this just blatant disregard for public safety is because nobody would ever be able to know what was happening. So they are protected by such a strong veil of secrecy in juvenile court that you, the public, would never be able to get in any of this information to see what was happening. So it's easy to do it when nobody knows what's happening, what's going on, what you're doing in there. You know, adult court, at least you can walk in, you can pull up a docket master, you can see what the judge has done in the case, who has released him, and you see it on the news. You'll say, oh, you know, certain judge released or reduced the bond and all that, and we see it happening in adult court. But the idea that we're protecting juveniles by keeping this secret really is absolutely false, and it's quite the opposite. Like I said, if you're representing, if you're defending the juveniles, you should have a problem with what's happening, because this, the releasing them immediately has only led them to a charge that has now resulted in a mandatory life sentence. So it's over. It's, they're 17, they're 16, 17 year old. It's over. They've murdered somebody now, and they're going to jail for the rest of their life. And they've never had a meaningful sentence before, despite all the armed robberies. So the secrecy is not protecting juveniles.
So the clerk in juvenile court works for and answers to the judges, right? Which is not the case in criminal district court or civil district court. Those individuals are actually elected, right?
Yes. That is, my understanding is the clerk works for the judges in juvenile court.
So, obviously, if the judges don't exhibit that any notion of caring about making sure that the records are in fact sacrosanct, why would the clerk care? You know, they seem to be all on the same sheet of music together. And again, you know, who has supervisory authority over the clerk? Is it just those judges, or is there another party? Is it the Supreme Court? I mean, somebody's got to have some supervisory authority that's laying on everyone's leg too. And if it's a Supreme Court, I mean, they need to get off their duff and do something. I mean, this is crazy.
I agree with that. And you know, I remember when we were fighting for the legislation, the clerks of court were opposed to it because it would have it adds additional work. Obviously, you now have to make juvenile records accessible.
Well, that's bullshit because they're not working. I mean, what you found, what you uncovered is they are in fact not working. So it's all a charade. I mean, because if you were working, these files would be sacrosanct, but they're not working. So
The interesting thing was the only thing that made the clerks nervous was a threat to their funding. They did not want to lose their funding to staff the employees. So that was the only sort of stick that could be wielded against them was, y'all have to start producing these records so that if you want to keep your funding. And the records for the future are expected to be electronic. So anything a current arrest, they're supposed to be downloading it. Now, I can tell you, when I start looking into their system as of now of what they're uploading, and it doesn't make much more sense to me at all, nor does it make sense to the victims. You'll have a random upload of, John Smith in custody on 8/23 of 24, but it doesn't give you any, that's not useful information. What's he in custody for? What happened? Is this a new arrest? Was he brought in on probation? So I think this is going to be a long-term issue with the clerks of sort of saying somebody's going to have to step in now if it's the Supreme Court and say this is what we expect the minute entries to look like, or it could be the legislature to amend that transparency bill and say this is what you are required to produce. When we said this is the information, we meant you have to make this easily accessible, and this is the format that we expect it in. And as it comes to the judges, and I think we discussed this on your show, you've discussed it before, certainly, we have now a little more teeth in our judicial supervision in terms of the amendment that was recently passed of oversight for judges, because I certainly see some issues here that should definitely be subjected to supervisory review. I don't understand what's happening in juvenile court, how it could pass any sort of muster from any higher court.
I don't either. I mean, I just wish someone would get off their duff and do something. We're losing lives out on the streets. These kids, we're not going to save them in this dysfunctional system. Not now, not ever, not on our best day, because our best day is less than, plain and simple. I don't know how else to say
it. Correct.
Laura Rodrigue, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We truly appreciate your hard work on this and shining the light on the frailties and the inefficiencies of our system. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. So, folks, recommend you go to Substack and read this article. It is compelling. It just points out some of the crazy things that we've been talking about on this show for a long, long time, both with Laura Rodrigue as well as Rafael Goyeneche. It seems as though it's continuing on. Things just don't seem to be getting any better. Somebody needs to step in. There needs to be a shock and awe approach to this system. People aren't working. And if these files are as discombobulated as they say, that's low-hanging fruit. It doesn't get any easier than that. They're not working. They're not doing what we expect of them to do. The rights of the perpetrators are impaired. The rights of the victims are impaired. This is some of the easiest work there is to do to maintain these files, make sure that they have an inventory of documents within those files. If the request is made under this new Truth and Transparency bill that was passed in the state legislature in 2024, there should be an itemization of the documents that they have the authority to release. Plain and simple. If you're running a court the right way, if you give a damn, if you care about the community that you call home, right? That's the real shocker here. These people actually live here, and they have this total disregard to the safety and security of you, their neighbors, and everyone else. They should be called out. You look at these cases, like the tour guide that was killed, Christy Thibodeau. The perpetrator in that case, Kevin Nunes, was 13. He was arrested for domestic abuse and was released by the court. 2 years after that arrest, the DA's office failed to make a decision to accept the charges in that case. So it goes through the screening process. That's done every day. The time period passes, they don't make a decision. And in the months between this dysfunction in the DA's office, this individual goes out and engages in more criminal activity. Simple criminal damage to property, 3 counts of aggravated assault with a firearm, domestic abuse, child endangerment, 4 counts of aggravated assault with a firearm, and 1 count of illegal possession of a handgun by a juvenile. And guess what? After each arrest, he was released. Yeah. He was finally brought into court on these charges, and when he arrived, he tested positive, go figure, cocaine, meth, ecstasy, and marijuana. He pled guilty to all charges, and guess what his sentence was from Judge Candace Bates Anderson? Someone who allegedly lives in our community. Someone you think would be given a damn about the risk to our community that this individual poses. 21 days in Boys Town. 21 days. He came back after spending the time in Boys Town, back into court, and he tested positive for marijuana again. And he refused to charge his ankle monitor. So it wasn't operational. In other words, in plain English, he flipped the judge off. So what does the judge do? Shock incarceration, 7 days. The defense attorney petitioned the court to release him early. 12 days. She actually, 12 days shock incarceration. He, 7 days into that incarceration, the judge released him. Why? What are you doing? And then weeks later, this is in May, weeks later on June 30th, 2024, Nunes murders the French Quarter tour guide, Christy Thibodeau. Thank you. Thank you, Judge. I mean, this whole thing is unfolding in front of you, and we you know, we're sitting on the bench with that nanny nanny boo boo mentality, and we're not doing anything. We're not paying attention to all the red flags, all the indicators that this individual is a risk to our community, and we know that there's not going to be. We know this. This is not a guess. We know this. There are studies that talk about the propensity for violence based on certain charges that these young juveniles are involved in. An assault with a firearm, this might be one of them, right? At the ripe old age of 15, I think. Right? You think maybe that's a telltale sign? And then this happens. And then we cry, nanny, nanny, boo, boo. We have no money. We can't do this. We can't do that. You know, we are impaired. Nobody cares. You get millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. And guess what? There's no execution. And these are the folks that we're electing to these positions. How they get there, I have no idea. But they should not be reelected. And collectively, they're guilty by association. I don't even want to hear not me. Because any individual judge can take a lot of this under their wing and straighten it out and get it right. But you got to give a damn first. And if you don't give a damn and you don't care, and you treat this as though it's rental property, mailbox money, your income, your check that you get, your compensation, you just show up to make sure that it hits your bank account and then you disappear. This is typically what you see when that's what's going on. Public service is not about going on a vacation. It's about working. And it's about working hard each and every day. And it's about caring. And it's about the safety and security of our community. Because the moment in time we have a hiccup or a series of hiccups, people are liable to get killed. And they are. We'll be right back.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.